Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. We talk about our favorite records. Talking Records Podcast. We're so glad you tuned in. Thank you all for listening. You showed up to the right place. Jed and his friends dive deep and analyze the records we have grown to love. We'll tell you how we found the band, then give you a track by track breakdown of all songs. So grab your favorite beverage and pull up a seat. Today we'll look at another record in its entirety.
Hello, what's up everyone? My name is Jed and you're listening to a podcast that deep dives into great albums. Albums we love, albums we've been listening to for a long time, and albums that are just recently coming out on vinyl. I am absolutely thrilled to be joined today by the Methadones.
Hey everyone, I just wanted to take a minute to direct your attention towards our Instagram at Talking Records Podcast. We can also be found on Twitter and YouTube. Give us a like or a follow and join in the chatter about favorite records and songs. We're music lovers and collectors and love nothing more than to chat music. Come say hello. You can also visit our website at talkingrecordspodcast.com. There you will find episodes, merch, and more. You can even drop us an email at talkingrecords@outlook.com. These are all great ways for us to connect with you over all the great music we enjoy. We would love to get this podcast into more ears, and you can help by providing us with a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, as every review helps us reach more listeners. Also, word of mouth is helpful too. All right, thanks everyone.
This Won't Hurt was released on July 10th, 2007 on Red Scare Industries. The Methadones are a band whose beginnings date back to 1993, when Dan Schaefer of Screeching Weasel formed the band as a side project. The band didn't begin focusing on recording until 1999. Based out of Chicago, Illinois, the band has included members of Screeching Weasel, The Queers, Teen Idols, even Joe Principle from Rise Against. I discovered the band in 2003, when a friend who was doing some work for Thick Records asked me if I had heard of the band. I said no, and he sent me some of their songs from the recent album Not Economically Viable. Songs like Mess We Made, Bored of Television, and Million Miles had that familiar Dan Vapid croon over catchy punk rock. It was everything I loved about the Riverdales when Dan had the mic. Then, in 2007, I joined a band called the Prozacs for the first time, and convinced my buddy Jay to let me borrow all of his Methadone CDs. Listening through them all, it was This Won't Hurt that really grabbed me. There was something about the song makeup, the lyrics, the structures, and production that just pushed this album to the front of my attention over the others. I love the power pop covers on 21st Century Power Pop Riot, but this album was just awesome. Instantly memorable songs that would get stuck in my head endlessly. Here to tell us more about This Won't Hurt is Dan, Pete, and Simon. Methadones, what is up? How's it going, guys?
Okay. How are you?
Let's go around the room. Who's who?
I'm Dan. I sing. I play guitar.
I'm Pete. I play bass.
I'm Simon. I play guitar.
Welcome, guys. I'm excited to have you on the Talking Records Podcast, a show where we deep dive albums we love. And today we are going to be talking about This Won't Hurt.
Right.
So, here we go. I got a whole bunch of questions for you on this record. And it starts off with, I want to get a sense of the writing process of this album. You have described this record in the past as a back to basics approach after Viable and Pop Riot. What does that mean, back to basics?
I don't know. I don't remember saying it, to be honest with you.
Oh.
I do remember saying that for Non-Economically Viable, though. I don't remember saying it for This Won't Hurt.
I think though that record, you know, Not Economically Viable had like some longer songs, a little more, maybe more pop songs than that. Whereas This Won't Hurt had shorter songs and they were a little more rock again, like the, you know, like what we were doing on like Career Objective and that. I think that's probably what that meant if that was said at that time. That's my guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it is kind of weird in 2022, and like to think about that in particular. But
yeah.
I don't know if I had any real approach to songwriting. Basically, what it is, it's just, hey guys, got this idea. Here it is. We start playing it, and then, you know, we kind of fart around with it, and then I end up finishing it at some point. And it's, you know, it's kind of like that for most of my records. I would say that there's a couple songs on that record that are more autobiographical, you know. So they happen exactly the way that they are written. There are a couple, but they're not a ton. Usually what happens is something irritates me, and then I take other things that have happened in my life that have irritated me in similar way, or made me laugh, or usually they've irritated me. Usually that's the catalyst of a song, is something that kind of irritates me. But and just kind of throw it all together and just kind of make it one thing, you know. I guess they would call, some writers call that a composite character, you know. What's different about This Won't Hurt is there's some songs that, like I said, that are autobiographical. Those would be Falling Forward and Already Gone. I'm thinking there's one more that's happened just how I said it. That was one thing different about that record than the previous ones.
I think all those, I mean, having played, you know, on several records with you, it seemed like all your songs were pretty autobiographical of what was happening in your life at the time, because you were the one writing all the lyrics and that, especially. So,
yeah, I mean, but, you know, like I said, they're, a lot of times they're changed. You know what I mean?
You know, I can think of stuff like Alcohol Makes the World Go Round. Like every line in that song, I know what that's about. Sure. You know what I mean? Cause it's about touring and stuff.
There's a couple made up lines in there. You know what I mean? That are fiction, but most
and
of
there's a couple of inside stuff. Jokes in there too. So,
well, the fart in the band too. You remember that?
Same, right? CDs being played over again. I know what that's about.
You got on I think that was you.
That was me.
You got on this. You got on this kick where I'm like, oh God, I forget who it was. I think it was Fat Records band or something. And you kept playing them and playing them and playing them. I'm like, stop.
I was going to ask Pete, what were you playing in the van over and over again? You don't remember?
At that time, it could have been anything. I was trying really hard to discover something new, and
I think it was like Good Riddance or something, one of those bands.
Possibly.
It was a very Fat Records-y band, if my memory. But yeah, that's one. You're right, Pete. That is autobiographical. But there's some lines in there that I made up as well, just to kind of, I don't know. It's a song. I'll do whatever the fuck I want, you know?
Hell yeah.
You know, whatever.
So, Dan, you bring in the lyrics, and do you have a lot of the music written out already, or do you kind of bring the guys in to collaborate on that?
No, I usually got the song written from start to finish. But those guys, like, just they add their filling parts, and, you know, they give me what they think, you know, what they like, maybe what they don't like. But they, you know, they come in and play, hit real hard, and, you know, like they have a certain feel to the way that, well, I'm talking about, Pete and Mike Soucy in particular. So I think a lot of like sound of the band kind of, even though I'm writing it, the sound maybe coming from those two in a lot of ways. So there's that, I think. And they're pretty good. You guys usually just kind of go, oh no, I think this is fine the way it is. Or usually that's the way it's pretty much worked out. Not always, but.
Yeah, Dan would usually bring in about like 98% of a song. You know, it would be pretty much, I mean, it would be a song that was mostly finished. But yeah, like you said, you know, the way we played it and that, you know, kind of would sometimes kind of a little bit change the sound of it.
Yeah.
or maybe we'd be like, oh, why don't we speed it up? Why don't we slow it down? Or every now and then, you know, or make it shorter or something like that, you know, just right. Something like that. Changed it from time to time.
Right.
On a rare occasion, one of the, you know, me or, you know, somebody might have had a riff here or there, and then Dan might have taken that and added more riffs and lyrics and vocals and shit and turned it into an actual song.
And that's pretty much the way it works now. So Simon, I got to ask, is Dan good about taking feedback on his songs, or is he touchy?
No, Dan is, he actively looks for stuff. Never touchy about anything like that.
That's good.
I mean, obviously I was never part of this record, but I played with Dan for like, I don't know, 12 or 13 years now, so.
Yeah, I mean, we don't always agree on everything, of course. You know, I think, I don't know. I mean, there's been, I mean, I'm actually thinking of the Methadones more, but there is always songs that like one guy liked that the other guy didn't. But I think that's just normal in any band. That's very normal.
Sure.
They've always pretty much been pretty receptive to anything that I've showed them.
So how did you guys connect with Matt Allison?
Well, he's a local guy, and when I lived in Chicago, he was at least, and you know, just knew people that recorded with him. And I'm trying to think of who introduced us to Matt, because I don't think I had met him before I had recorded in his studio.
Did we record with him before we went on tour with the Lawrence Arms? Because didn't Neil work that studio? Was it him or was it? I can't remember how we got introduced to Matt.
Somebody told me about him somewhere. You know, I have no memory. No memory. I don't think I met him before I recorded in a studio. Did you?
No, I had never met him at all.
You know, we knew his name and everything. He recorded a lot of records, but you know, he took us on, and we ended up doing a few things with him. We did the 21st Century Power Pop Riot. We did a split with the Copyrights, and we did This Won't Hurt.
All right, so you'd already worked with him prior to This Won't Hurt on the Power Pop Riot album.
Correct. Yep.
Oh, all right.
Nice. And the Copyright split, I think, right? Because was that before This Won't Hurt, or was that after?
I don't remember. My timeline's getting a little either. Rusty here.
That was, well, yeah. I know it was 2007 because I had broken my arm the day before we went in the studio. So.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So how did you break your arm?
I flipped the go-kart on top of myself.
So this is right before you had to go into the studio?
Yeah, a couple days before.
Oh, man. So how did you get by?
Dan played my parts. I didn't play on that record, technically.
What he did is he told me everything that he wanted played.
Yeah.
And I played it exactly the way he wanted it. Even if I don't remember correctly, too, Pete, even with my right hand, you were like, yeah, hit it a little harder.
Yeah, I was standing in front of you while you were playing it. Yeah, I was there when you were doing it.
You're kind of coaching me to play like you.
Just beat the fuck out of it, man. Just beat the shit out of it.
I was going to say, having him over your shoulder must have been nerve-wracking.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm just making that up, but I think you said that to me. Like, no, really hit it harder with your right hand, like, you know, your picking hand.
Yeah, I probably said.
So I did, you know. Just did what you wanted.
Yeah. Did you guys like working at Atlas? Was it comfortable there?
It is, yeah. It's, I do like working at Atlas. It's, you know, a great studio. Got, you know, made a lot of really great records. And, you know, it's, easy for us to get to. At least it used to be when we, you know, when we lived there.
I liked recording there too, as long as there wasn't a Cubs game.
Oh God, yeah.
Like as a traffic or?
Well, that was a factor, brutal. But also Matt loved, he was a Cubs freak. So, you know, like between songs, he'd be running out there. He'd be watching the TV.
Oh my gosh.
But so would I.
It was pretty funny. Yeah. But so would Dan. So it was pretty funny.
We'd both be like watching the game.
We'd have to wait till like, you know, breaks in the game to go record. It was pretty funny.
This is 2007. I'm trying to remember how the Cubs were that year.
They were starting to. Now they weren't that great that year. I'm trying to think if that was the.
Yeah, my Red Sox won the World Series that year. So.
Yeah. God, I thought that was 2005, but maybe I'm wrong. Like I said, my timeline is all over the place.
Yeah.
Need to write this stuff down, man. Come prepared, right? We're talking records.
The news travels fast in this town. It's all popping up our room to be found. The windy city rumor mill will generate. If you have guts to spill, the walls are closing in while listening to me. So let's get into these songs a little bit, guys. In Six Degrees of Separation, you talk of the Windy City rumor mill will generate if you have guts to spill. Was the scene back then petty? Was there a lot of rumors going around?
No, I mean, that there's a lot of truth to that, too. It's not, you know, when I say autobiographical, I mean like exactly the way it happens. That's based on what had happened. But yeah, there was always a lot of gossip and shit. You know, 6 degrees of separation is something my wife used to say a lot. She goes, oh God, everybody's 6 degrees by separation, 6 degrees. And next thing I know, I'm like 6 degrees, you know. Yeah. I'm kind of singing it because I'm always hearing her use that expression.
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of what it's born out of.
So do you do that, like hear phrases and just like kind of repeat them over and over again in your mind until you get like a melody going?
I mean, a lot of times, on Non-Economically Viable, there's a song called Hit a Nerve, and Pete actually said it. Like we were somewhere and he goes, oh man, you really hit a nerve. And then just chorus, there it was.
Nice. Does Pete get a writing credit on that?
No. Is there something I don't get? How do you buy into this? Am I just getting old or losing touch? Or is there something I don't see? I'm scratching my head and it's falling. Am I just getting old or losing touch? Am I losing touch?
In getting older, the song is just a fantastic song. It's one of my favorite songs about watching the punk scene become manufactured for Hot Topic and, you know, seeing great bands being squeezed out by these ridiculous.
That's the other autobiographical one too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd forgotten about that one. That is exactly the way it happened too.
I remember 07 being a transitional year where I didn't recognize half the bands on like the Warped Tour list.
Right.
Well, I remember, I think we went together, you know.
I went with Joe Principe.
Okay. I don't know if I ran into you guys there or what, but I know there was like a couple years in a row where we ended up going there either together or separately or that. And for those few years, we always knew bands who were playing. And it was always like, well, I don't want to fucking go to that. But then they'd invite you and you'd be like, well, fuck it. It's free, right? You know, like if someone's going to throw me on, I ain't going to say no. And you go, and then all of a sudden, like, even at that time, back then, that far ago, like, feeling like you're like the oldest person there.
Like a dinosaur.
You know, and that was, what, 15 years ago? I mean,
no,
like, you feel like you're the oldest person there, and you're looking around, and you're going, what the fuck is going on? Like, you know, how did we go from, you know, the Fireside Bowl or some of these older clubs even, that were even shittier and smaller and all that, and how did we end up here? You know what I mean? Like,
right. Right. Well, that's what that song's about. Yeah. And
a place like that, which was just so nothing like what we had grown up with.
Well, yeah, it was so radically different. And like, I mean, right, it started with Green Day and then it went to Blink 182. And then, and I, you know, that was fine. And I kind of, I was accustomed to that a little bit. And it wasn't that these bands found success, but there was something about Warped Tour where it was like, it was at a whole new level for me, you know, where I went, oh my, it's just, yeah, this is punk rock now. You know what I mean?
It's like theatrical.
And like, and that's when I really felt it for the, like, for some reason, like that day, like it was just like, fuck, I feel so alien to this. Mm. So outside of what is going on here, you know, I can't stress it enough. It wasn't that these bands found success. It was just, it was a whole different level of commercialization and just, you know, there are bands that like, you know, I'm not going to start naming names on a podcast here, but I remember one in specific. I mean, the singer would look exactly like the freaking Misfits. And at the time I was like, wait a minute, come on, man. This is like so freaking obvious that this guy is trying to be Glenn Danzig, and they're all like doing these synchronized jumps and everything. And I'm like, oh, this is so absolutely ridiculous. And of course, everyone there loved him, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh boy, I'm in trouble. You know?
What the hell is this?
Yeah, I felt like, and it wasn't like an old man thing for me either, because there's plenty of new bands that I like. And, you know, you're always going to have people that are older and be like, oh, back in my day, it was blah, right. blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But it was, and I don't mind change, and I understand that change is inevitable, but it wasn't the kind of change that it was like a change in values in many ways. You know, it was a change in just, God, I don't even know like how to explain it beyond that. It's just like, you know, it's like the stuff when I asked Pete about this in a second, but it's like when we were growing up, it was the kind of stuff that you used to say, like, you know, oh, hey, where are you playing? Well, we're playing the Rosemont Horizon this weekend. Well, you know, like 7-8 years later, that's really the case. And so at that specific time in the year 2000, I found it really bizarre. Now I'm very used to it. I couldn't write that song now, you know? Mm. There would be no way, because it's been going on for so long. It's not new to me. It's not shocking to me anymore. It's not like, now it's just the same old, you know? But at that point, it came across like a big deal. I don't know. Ask Pete what he thinks.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's just, yeah, it was just so different from what we had grown up with, you know, going to these small little hardcore shows. And, you know, the fact that some of those shows were at like 1,000 capacity venue was like a big deal back, you know, when we were kids and that. And then just to see how it had changed so much, and, you know, and everything had like big corporate sponsors and things like that. And it was just like,
oh, that's a very important point too. You
know, yeah. It was really strange.
The sponsorship. And then like at the time, you know, like getting a beer for $6 was kind of a big deal. I think it's a big now, but you know,
$6 is cheap at a stadium now.
Yeah. No, right.
And door prices. Yeah.
Right. Right. So, I don't know. It's about all that. And like I said, like now we're all used to it now.
You know, you mentioned door prices though. I don't have a problem with door prices being higher, because it actually pisses me off as a person who still plays in bands. It pisses me off if a show is only like $5, because dude, when I started going to shows in 1985, they were $5. Why the fuck are they still $5 now? There's no reason for that. No wonder nobody makes any money. You know, that's absurd.
Yeah,
even $10 is cheap, I think.
That's true, but I think some of the shows that I've been to lately have been too much, way too much. Honestly, I just do. I thought our show at Reggie's was too much.
I don't even know how much it was. So.
Like, well, it was over 20.
Wow. Okay. Oh, I had no idea.
I don't think a show should be over.
I think it depends.
Like, you know, I don't know. Like, but I don't know. I've got mixed feelings about it because at the same time, I mean, like, you know, everybody's downloading the freaking record for free. It's like, I might as well get paid somehow, right?
Yeah. Good point. So
I got mixed feelings about it. But I also kind of think, like, you know, I don't know. I don't like being a gouger either. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm all over the place, man. I'll figure it out.
We're out of touch. It's like we were selling t-shirts. What, 15? How much are Cheats t-shirts? $15 or something? Like,
yeah.
Most, everything's gone up so much. Like door prices, $20, a t-shirt for 30. I think it's normal now.
Again, if things are too cheap though, that's one of the reasons nobody is making any money on it, you know?
Yeah.
Except like, and here's something that we've dealt with in the past too. Like, except you got like the sound guy who sometimes is getting paid more than the band. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, the band's so, the band really is the last to get paid often.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In those situations, it's like everybody gets paid except like, and then the band gets paid last.
Right.
You know, like the sound man, or the guy sweeping the floors got his money, but the band didn't. Yes. You know what I mean? Like I said, I'm kind of all over the place with this, but
yeah.
Even over the 15 years I've been here, it's changed a ton. It's insane. It's crazy.
So Turning Up the Noise feels like it could also be directed at some of those bands from back then. But I want to move on to, you have a version of, I believe you have an acoustic version, but then on your B-sides record, you had a full band version. So tell me about that. Which one came first and how did you decide which one to use on the album?
Well, the first version was just the acoustic version.
In the fallen night, underneath the starry sky, guided by dotted lines, mile markers and highway signs. I'm so far from the city, yet in a way you're here with me, I believe.
When it was done, it wasn't jiving with me. And I had a lot of people around me that really liked it, but I just wasn't hearing it, man. I was just like, God, I don't know. I wasn't used to just singing on top of an acoustic guitar like that. But I thought the song could be a lot more than what it was. So I tried to re-record it. And funny thing, now going back, I don't really mind the original version as much. But for whatever reason, it just bugged me at the time. I do like the other version of it as well, though. So it worked out fine for me to have two versions.
Yeah, that's cool. I heard the album title comes from a night of drinking shots. Is there any truth to that rumor?
Yeah, yep. A guy we know said, oh, this won't hurt, and he did a shot. And that's like, it just stuck for some reason.
Was there whiskey involved, Pete?
I don't know. I don't think I was. No, I wasn't drinking back then, I don't think. I think I was sober back then still.
Yeah.
It wasn't until later.
Yeah, I think that's, I don't think you were either, Pete. It was like 2007.
But I do know, you know, I do know the reference, because even when I wasn't drinking and everyone else was, I was still usually around, still hanging out. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I remember that happening. I remember that guy saying that many times, in fact. And then it became a saying that stuck. It became a saying that we used not just for shots, but for other shit here and there as well, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think mainly our guitar player Mike would say it a lot, though. He'd like go get himself a bottle of whiskey or something, and he'd say that before he started drinking it. Well, we see how that turned out.
Yeah.
I think it hurt him.
I think it did hurt him in the end.
Hurt. This will hurt. So what went into the decision to finally get this out on vinyl, guys?
These shows that we're doing, I think it was, you know, when we started doing this, we had the idea of, you know, playing these shows, and our drummer, Mike Susie, suggested that we should re-release it because it was out. And like, you know, that's a good idea. And so he really got the ball kind of rolling on this. He's not part of the conversation here right now because he's at work, but it was mostly him, I would say. I liked the idea right off the bat. I thought it was very suitable for these, you know, this batch shows. So,
and you guys have Reduno coming up in a couple weeks.
That's next week.
1 week tonight. Be quiet.
1 week from today, we'll be from tomorrow, we'll be playing.
Yeah. You guys excited?
I am. Yeah.
Italy, baby.
Amazing.
Yes. Awesome. Yeah.
I'm excited, but it's going to be a lot of running around because.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. I mean, Pete and I don't really have the luxury of staying very long. But, you know, I think the shows are going to be really great. And you know, it will recoup itself and everything. So, you know, all our bandmates will be able to kind of get a vacation out of it in a way. I think that would be good.
Yeah,
so hopefully Pete and I get a vacation at some point, right, Pete?
Couple hours anyway.
Yeah. All right.
A couple hours of silence on an airplane and then a couple hours of
many hours.
Exactly. Chilling out
yeah.
after or before playing.
I know, right? That hurt <That's> too.
Awesome. No doubt.
Well, I think it's awesome that you guys are playing Punk Rock Reduno, 4 days of punk rock music in Bergamo, Italy. Bands like Chicks Dig It, The Huntingtons, Giant Eagles, Lone Wolf, both the Methadones and Dan Vapid and the Cheats are playing. Kurt Baker, Jeff Useless. It's going to be awesome. I'm psyched for you guys. You mentioned that the vinyl kind of sprung from playing some recent shows. What have the recent shows been like?
So I heard we played a show the other night.
Yeah. Did you hear about it?
Well, I heard I was there, but I don't really remember it.
Barely. You're there in body.
Sorry. Shit happened. Something happened, man.
We noticed.
Too many beers happened.
Or it was more than that, yeah.
More than that.
More than too many.
It was a whole bottle of whiskey out front with the homeless guy. Ooh. Mixed with a lot of beers.
Ouch.
I'll do it. I guess it
did.
I'm going to try to find the silver lining in this storm cloud. And I'm going to say that if it's going to happen anywhere, that was probably a good place to do it because.
Right. It's kind of how I see it.
Yeah.
Too.
The greatest show for us anyway. Yeah. My voice was shot and it was like, what, 12 people there or something. I don't know.
Oh.
I mean, the people that were there were, you know, they
were into it.
They were they were having a good time. Some people came from far distances too, which I even felt bad. I'm like, oh, great. You got a couple from Austin, Texas. You got a couple from Nashville. Where's everybody from St. Louis?
Yeah. It was an intimate show.
They didn't show up. Of course, I had a lot of people telling me, well, that's going to be a bad weekend. I'm like, yeah, and it's St. Louis. I'm like, well, yeah, I know, but. we need to get some money in the coffers if we want to go and play Raduno, because we won't break even otherwise. And we get on this back on this back in the saddle, as they say. And then it wasn't the greatest show that we had the other night, but the one in Chicago, that was great. Let's nice. Let's focus on that. Where did you hide the sun?
It didn't come up this morning, and it's the last thing I have left. It's all I fucking...
It's great to hear you guys are playing again, and I'm super psyched that This Won't Hurt is out on vinyl. I'm very excited. Red Scare has got it, and it's out. Definitely one of my favorite albums by you guys, so I appreciate you coming on here and telling me a little bit about it.
Righteous.
All right, guys. I really appreciate you making time for me tonight.
Thank you for the interview. All right, thank Pete, you. Simon, thanks, I will see you next week.
Yep.
All right, guys. See you guys.
Good night.
I would like to thank the guys for hanging out with me today, talking about This Won't Hurt, trying to remember things from a long time ago. I think they did pretty well. I'd also like to thank Katie Hovland for setting me up with the methadones. I'd like to thank Jay Prozac for letting me borrow all those methadone CDs back in 07. I'd like to thank Chris DeMakes from Less Than Jake for the theme music. And, of course, I would like to thank all of you. If you're listening, if you've listened this far, thank you. Thanks for tuning in to Talking Records. I really do appreciate you listening and for talking music with me on Instagram. I know I need to be a little better about Twitter and Facebook, but thanks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing. Have a great summer. Make sure you use lots of sunblock.